Oh, baby, welcome to it. It is Thursday, the 18th of April, 2024, almost the weekend. I'm Derek Hunter. This is the Derek Hunter Program. Thank you for listening, downloading, sharing, telling a friend, all that good stuff. Please keep doing that. Do it more. Do it a little bit more. And thank you, especially to those of you who go to patreon.com/DerekHunterPodcast or DerekHunter.locals.com. Subscribe to the Week in Effin Review. Enter the contests. Do all that sort of stuff. I've got some stuff I'm working on to post up there soon, so stay tuned on that one. $5 a month, all I ask, because it's all you got. It's all we got going here. One person against the world. Well, you guys are with me, so I appreciate that. As we take on the world. All right, let's get started with that world, because good God, help us all with all the stupid. We'll get to as much of the world's news as we possibly can, because good God, there's just so much stupid out there. Every single damn day, you wake up and you go, this is the day they're going to figure it out. This is the day, and it's never the day. It's never the day. It's the opposite of the day. It's opposite day. Remember as a kid when you did opposite day, or you tried to do opposite day? It's a nice little exercise. I should probably get my kids to do that, where you have to make a conscious effort to do or say the opposite, mostly say, the opposite of whatever it is you want to say. It's fun. I think it's a good exercise, just like I think Pig Latin is a good thing. Right? You need a pig. It never came in handy. Nobody ever stood up, I can't communicate with this man. Does anybody know Pig Latin? But it helps you formulate words. It helps you make sure that you can control what comes out of your mouth, because you have to consciously think about it before it does. I think I had a conversation with my wife once where she didn't know what Pig Latin was. If I ever have an affair and I need to talk about it on the phone with my girlfriend or something, I'll be like, honey, hey, what? My Pig Latin skills have atrophied, but there's a joke in there. Go ahead and finish it in your head. You're welcome, America. But I find all of this stuff ridiculous. We're going to get into where this is relevant. With NPR and Your Truth and the Universal Truth and this truth, and everybody has their own truth. Nobody has their own truth. There's one truth. It's just the truth. It's pretty simple, pretty basic. Used to be the way everybody understood things, but because reality is so unhelpful to what the progressive left wants, not just here but around the world, they simply ignore it. They simply change it. Words mean different things. Actions mean different things. This country's fundamentally racist and founded. I can't find it. Well, now there's microaggressions. What's a microaggression? Why, that's racism that's so minor that the person doing it doesn't realize they're doing it. They don't intend to do it. They're not racist at all. The person having it done to them, the minority person being assaulted by this horrible microaggression, doesn't realize it either. Only an impartial third-party observer, astute enough, enlightened enough, can spot this horrible affront to humanity being perpetrated on somebody, usually a person of color, sometimes a gay person, whatever. But they spot it, this third-party observer. One might think, if you want to think about a microaggression and the enforcement of microaggressions the way that the left does it, before it gets out of hand and while you're still allowed to say this, think of them as the religious police in Iran, right? You're just a girl. You're taken. It's hot. And you decide to show a little hair. And you don't think much of it. Maybe wear the hijab a little bit higher on the head, because you want to get some of that heat out of your head. And nobody around you, upon the exposure of your follicles, turns into a monster. Oh, my God, can you believe it? Nobody freaks out. Nobody turns into a rabid rapist going, hair, I must rape you, or anything like that, whatever it is. And people just go about their business. But it is the enlightened, third party, uninterested, uninvolved person, the religious police over there, who recognize your mistake on your behalf. They're doing it for you. It's all for you. And then they must kill you. I mean, obviously, it's your own, you showed hair. What is your problem? It's maybe not to that extent yet, but we're getting there where you showed a microaggression. What did you say? You said, you people, and you're not allowed to say you people. Like, why are you not allowed to say you people? I was talking about you people, you three people right there. One of them was a minority. That's a microaggression. You don't get it. This one dates back all the way to 1992 when Ross Perot was talking to, I believe, the NAACP. He was talking about things, and he said, now, you people, you don't understand, or you people, more than anybody, you get that, whatever it was, he just said, you people. And desperate to damage Ross Perot, Democrats came up with the idea that talking to an audience and referring to an audience the way that audiences have been referred to since people started referring to audiences was suddenly racist. It's a recognition of the fact that we were out of real problems at the time, or at least running out of real problems, and Democrats desperately needing real or fake problems, whatever, some way to divide people. If racism goes away, Democrats would have to invent it, was the old joke. And now the Democrats have invented it with the microaggression. So you have all of this. It's just a long way to just talk about people being stupid, going off on a tangent here. Because we're going to, it's, stupid is probably a theme for a lot of the show today. Starting right here with the UK Daily Mail. UK Daily Mail reports, lawmakers are demanding answers after it was revealed the U.S. is sending taxpayer dollars to a Chinese army lab to make bird flu viruses more dangerous to people. Now, this isn't from 2019, the build-up to COVID. The date on this story, April 17th, 2024. Yeah, let that sink in. Our government at work. 18 members of Congress. Let me just, 18 members of Congress. There are 535 members of Congress, 538 or something like that, if you count the non-voting members of the House for territories. And there's only 18 who, upon hearing this news, demand answers. Let that sink in. 18 members of Congress are demanding answers from the Department of Agriculture about a project which was first revealed by DailyMail.com. It is part of a $1 million collaboration between the USDA and the CCP-run Chinese Academy of Sciences, the institution that oversees the Wuhan lab at the center of the COVID lab leak theory. Don't you love that? Hey, this time I'm sure they won't screw up. This time I'm absolutely positive that things will go swimmingly. What could possibly... The odds of things going sideways twice... No way, especially not in the build-up to an election year where Democrats are desperate to control the manner in which people vote. And you think, well, they're not going to create it, deliberately kill a bunch of people to nothing, trust nothing from any politician. Don't put anything past them. They've got 100 million dead people in their wake, not from war, but from their policy mistakes. That they refuse to admit were policy mistakes. The closest they come to admitting a policy mistake is, well, true communism has never been tried. So just don't give any politician the benefit of the doubt, for the love of God, but definitely not Democrats. In a scathing letter to USDA Secretary Tom Vilsack last week, the bipartisan group said, quote, "This research funded by American taxpayers could potentially generate dangerous new lab-created virus strains that threaten our national security and our public health." You think? You think? The research comes as fears about bird flu rise. A farm worker in Texas caught the H5N1 strain that is racing through cattle across the U.S. earlier this month, becoming only the second ever American to be diagnosed. And experts are bracing for more cases. In February, it was revealed the United States government was funneling $1 million to China to see if scientists could make a, quote, highly pathogenic avian influenza, end quote, more contagious to mammals using gain-of-function research. Boy, they're just dining out on their greatest hits, aren't they? They're not even trying to come up with new songs anymore. It's just one, we are one-hit wonders, and we put out a greatest hits album. When I first heard about gain-of-function, I thought, I guess that makes sense. I hadn't thought about it all that much. I didn't even know it existed. This was, of course, at the beginning of COVID. And the idea behind gain-of-function is there are these viruses out there that don't impact human beings. But viruses evolve. What if in a lab they could evolve them, get them to be able to impact humans, and then run all sorts of tests, and from that be able to create vaccines or treatments for these viruses should they ever one day evolve in nature in the way that they were evolving in the lab or evolved in the lab and impacting human beings. You go, oh my God, this new virus, now it impacts humans. Hey, wait a second, 50 years ago we did this research, we've got this shot or this pill or whatever, and or we know what to do. There you go, problem solved before problem creates. In theory, in a vacuum, it kind of makes sense if you don't think about it too hard. Then I thought about it. You have to recognize that there's a theory in quantum physics that, and I know, stay awake. There's a theory in quantum physics that says for every possible choice, for every option in life, whether you stand up, sit down, everything, no matter how innocuous, there are infinite number of possibilities from that. You could start walking with your right foot, your left foot, hop, fall, sit back down. All of these possibilities. You take a long step, a not so long step. There are literally, if you take it to that extent, there are infinite number of possibilities. It's quantum physics. They just sit around and make stuff up. It's like being paid to talk like you did when you were stoned in college. Quantum physics. I really went into the wrong profession, to be honest with you. I should be there. But from there, since there are infinite number of possibilities, the theory in quantum physics is that there's a universe created for each one of those possibilities. That every second, every nanosecond of every day, there are infinite number of new universes, alternate realities, dimensions, whatever you want to call them, created from everything. There's an endless crack in the ice or whatever, however you want to look at it, a broken car windshield or something. And so the idea, if you just take that rationally and you recognize that there are, if you're looking at a virus that doesn't impact people and it might evolve, there are infinite number of ways that it could evolve, the vast majority of which don't impact human beings. And then the odds of the one or two ways that are created in a lab, knowing that there are infinite number of, infinity is a huge number. So you say the vast majority of an infinite number don't impact human beings. That means that there's still infinite number of ways that it could impact human beings. So again, your eyes will glaze over. I don't mean to confuse you, but I just want to give clarity because infinity is not a set number. There is, if you prepare, quote unquote, or create one or two, go, great, if it evolves this way, we'll be fine, we'll be ready. First of all, gain-of-function research has never once created a treatment for anything they've created yet. Nothing they've created has occurred in nature yet, thank God. So the idea that you could not only hit a bullet with a bullet, but hit a certain part of a bullet with a certain part of a bullet to get to this level of micro management of reality is absurd. It's impossible, really. But they do it anyway. Because why? Because if you don't spend the money, you lose the money. A lot of people need to justify their jobs. There are a lot of people working on medical, maybe not impossibilities, because one shot in infinity is still one shot in infinity. There's a chance. But imagine if all of the money spent on and all of the energy and all the people spending their time on this sort of stuff spent it on fighting cancer. It's no guarantee we'd find a cure or treatment that works, but you'd certainly do more. You'd get closer, one would imagine. But we don't do that. We're now focusing on theoretical. It's part of the we're out of problems, really, and so we manufacture problems. We feel as though we're doing quite well against what we currently know, so we have to create things that we don't know on the possibility that they happen in nature. When in reality, as we saw in the COVID-19, they created something out of bat poop that impacted human beings, killed a bunch of people. Thankfully, it immediately started devolving back to where it is. That's the one good thing about nature, is it tends to revert back to itself, to its natural state. So while all of these idiots in labs create, and it, you know, we got lucky that COVID-19 wasn't worse and that it wasn't slower to devolve. But who knows about the next one? You put these little protein receptors on this, and it takes a while for them to fall off in successive generations of viruses. Just like an abandoned house, abandoned property, abandoned cities. Nature reclaims them. Nature reverts back to itself. How long that takes depends. But the more you mess with things, the more problems you have, because there's no guarantee that nature will revert back to itself. Nature could go take something and run with it. It's best not to mess with nature. This is my problem with the idea when Bill Gates is floating the idea of seeding the upper atmosphere with particles to reflect some of the sun's light in an attempt to control global temperatures, to save us from climate change, to save us from global warming. Like, first of all, you haven't proven that this thing exists. Secondly, what you're talking about is pretty irreversible, dude. I get it. And you're an old man, and you're going to die relatively soon, so you don't have to live in the potential disaster that you create. The people cheering gain of function, they probably won't be around when it really goes sideways. It is people screwing up our economy, the people screwing up our government. You think Joe Biden's going to be around in 10 years? What are the odds of Joe Biden being around in 10 years? Having to deal with the ramifications of the disaster that his administration has been. He doesn't have to. He is Mr. Magoo walking through, knocking everything over, destruction in his wake, blissfully unaware. Pockets full of money. He's made even more money. He's a filthy rich guy. His family's filthy rich. They're all good. He's going off into the sunset, and we're all left to deal with it. In his remaining years, he is leading such an insulated life inside the White House that he is unaware of the destruction that he has brought. They don't mention it to him. They make sure the president doesn't get bad information. You don't want the president upset. Not because, oh my God, he might become a blubbering, crying, lunatic, unstable moron, but because he gets angry. He's one of those people who, when you tell him something he doesn't like, he doesn't adapt. He gets pissed at the person who told him, how dare you, this is not how it is. They refuse to accept reality because they only think of reality in terms of how it directly impacts them. These people in the labs only think about how this directly impacts them. Oh, I've got to maybe concoct this horrible, deadly virus that could kill tens of millions, hundreds of millions of people, billions of people, who knows? But I'm doing it for the greater good. Of what? Ultimately, their greater good is they get a job. They keep a job. They maintain a job. They do quite well for themselves. In China's case, they could create something horrible. Why would you work on even the possibility of creating something horrible with one of the, I don't know, handful of nations, 3 to 5 countries in the world, who would possibly use it. If the virus had a 20% mortality rate, what country would survive it best? Wouldn't it be the one with 1.5 billion people who can't take care of 1.5 billion people? Who doesn't care about 1.5 billion people? Who would look at losing 20% of 1.5 billion people as a good start? Especially if they didn't have to construct the mechanisms by which you eliminate a quarter of 1.5 billion people? I'm just saying, just throwing it out there. But this is your government at work. This is your tax dollars at work. This is the government being stupid and obstinate and ignorant. Let's create a solution to a problem that doesn't exist. But first, we have to create the problem that doesn't exist. But don't worry, we'll do it in a lab setting. What could possibly go wrong? Well, everything, as we've learned. Since we're talking about stupidity today, let's talk about the WNBA. Now, the WNBA is the least popular professional sport, it's a professional, it's a loose term, in the country, if not the world. I'm sure there's some sort of weird, gross thing going on around the world that is less popular. But it is, in the first world, the WNBA, is just, it's been subsidized for decades by the NBA. If it were not subsidized by the, it's a PR thing for the NBA. They're like, oh, well, we'll keep this afloat. They make billions and billions of dollars. So it's easy for them to just go, all right, we're going to, we'll throw a couple of million or a couple hundred million or whatever it is to the WNBA because why not? Now we get to say, let's face it, there's a lot of screwing around in professional sports, right? There's a lot of extracurricular activities, not just, you know, amongst men who are dating somebody, but amongst men who are married to somebody. That doesn't stop a lot of professional athletes from screwing around because you've got people who just kind of women who throw themselves at professional athletes. It's a reality of the situation. So the NBA is sort of in a situation where they were able to kind of undercut some of that criticism. You still get players with, you know, having 4 kids with 3 different women or whatever. That's in every sport. But the WNBA allows the NBA to inoculate itself a little bit from criticisms and charges of misogyny in a way that other sports can't. I guess there's semi-professional women's hockey or whatever, but it's not really an issue, and there aren't that many women out there who are all that interested in playing it, not enough and not good enough to formulate a league. The Major League Baseball, softball's different. There's a sort of a professional softball thing, but Major League Baseball doesn't really. It's popular enough they don't need it. And the NFL is just, you can't do it. Women, they did do the lingerie bowl. I know. I can't believe I said it out loud, but they did. I'm not saying I watched it. Would never admit to having watched it. But, you know, these sort of basketball sort of affords itself for a women's version of it. Unlike that, because, you know, what is the world record for the longest field goal, 30 yards? We saw the woman who played college football as a kicker a year or two ago, and she couldn't even kick off. It was just bad. So, not that women couldn't train to do it, but then nobody's going to want to run down the field and take a hit. I don't blame them. Most men don't want to run down the field and take a hit. So, it's a different scenario. The genders are different. And thank God for that. Viva la différence. But the WNBA exists because the NBA throws money at it, throws a lot of money at it. And so the idea that there should be parity in pay is absurd, is stupid, is beyond stupid. One generates billions of dollars a year in revenue and profits, and another generates losses every year. Every single year. But it is now the cause celeb of the day of the left that they can go around and claim like we need to pay. Why? Because of Caitlin Clark. Caitlin Clark was the first round draft pick in the WNBA. They're called the Fever. I think they're called the Fever. Whatever the hell it is. I don't know. I honestly don't know. Liberty. I know one of the teams is called Liberty. And that's it. I couldn't name a second one, except if maybe this one's called Fever. Even the President of the United States yesterday, because he pays women less in his administration, and he wants to distract from that, tweeted out, "Women in sports continue to push new boundaries and inspire us all. But right now we're seeing that even if you're the best, women are not paid their fair share. It's time that we give our daughters the same opportunities as our sons and ensure women are paid what they deserve." Well, this is a jackass who supports that our sons be able to become our daughters and then beat the hell out of the women in their chosen sport field, right? If every retired NBA player decided, you know what, at age 38, when I'm a little bit slow, a little out of it, I'm now a woman, they would absolutely dominate the WNBA. They would dominate it. So you sit there and whine about, oh, Caitlin Clark's not being paid enough. Caitlin Clark, blah, blah, blah. Ro Khanna, a progressive Democrat, tweeted out that the first pick in the NBA draft will make around $10 million in 1 year. Caitlin Clark will make $76,535. That is wrong. Pay women what they deserve. They are getting paid what they deserve. They're getting actually overpaid what they deserve. Honestly, oh, you're such a horrible misogynist. Yeah, I don't really care. The NBA... The End Wokeness account did the math on this. The NBA generates 167 times the revenue of the WNBA. 167 times the revenue. NBA's revenue, $10 billion. $10 billion. The WNBA's revenue generated $60 million. That is a fraction. That is $10 billion versus $60 million. I'll repeat what my friend's mother taught me once, so you can differ with million, billion, 10 million, 60 billion, not that far apart. Eons apart. Eons apart. A million seconds is 11 days. All right? Keep that in mind. A million seconds is 11 days. A billion seconds is 33 years. Okay? 11 days versus 33 years for just 1 billion. NBA, $10 billion in revenue. WNBA, $60 million in revenue. You're looking at eons. It's a couple of, quite a few centuries, millennia, really, versus a couple of, maybe 2 years? I don't know. Just doing the math off the top of my head. Major difference in revenue increases. The NBA players, they make an average of 93 times the average of the WNBA player's salary, average salary, which means that WNBA players are actually overpaid. And the only reason the WNBA players are paid at all, let alone overpaid, is because of NBA players, the success of the NBA. If the NBA goes under, the WNBA is gone. Nobody's going to go, you know what? The world is clamoring for this. There was a, I'm going to butcher this, I'm sure, but I wrote about this in my book to illustrate just how few racists there are in this country, genuine racists, not, you know, you're racist because you disagree with this policy or whatever, or you criticize this person on an unrelated thing, but they happen to be a different color than you, the left declares that to be racist. And it was looking at Klan membership in my book. The Southern Poverty Law Center estimated, I'm going to get the numbers wrong, but it's in my book. You can look it up. Estimated somewhere around, it was like 6,000 to 8,500 members of the KKK in 2016. Right? That's not a lot. A nation of 300 million people, that's not a whole hell of a lot of members at all. Now, it used to be hundreds of thousands, and now it's down when there were fewer people, when there was about a third the population back in the turn of the century, the turn of the 20th century. So the number of members of the Klan, the granddaddy of all left-wing hatred, racist organizations, not only dropped in real numbers, but as a percentage of the population, it cratered. Yet we were told that the country is fundamentally racist, fundamentally this, founded on it, whatever. And I looked at the number, the average of the estimate for the Southern Poverty Law Center of the members of the KKK was somewhere around 75, 7,600, whatever it was. It just so happened that that same year, the WNBA announced record attendance, record average attendance. It was their most successful year to date, and they'd been around that point 15 or so years. And it was a couple of hundred, not much more than that, a couple of hundred more people per average WNBA game than there were Klan members in the United States of America. Which is saying something, that if the average attendance for average game of the least popular professional sport in the country is greater than the total number, as estimated by a left-wing organization, the Southern Poverty Law Center, that has every incentive in the world to inflate those numbers because it justifies their existence, that the average attendance at a game nobody watches, a sport nobody watches, was greater than the entirety of Klan membership in this country, then maybe we'd come a long way. Maybe we'd come a long way, and it's about time that we sort of stop looking at it in those sorts of terms. But every once in a while, somebody on the left points things out. There is a union contract, believe it or not, that dictates what rookie salaries are in the WNBA, that takes into account the reality that the NBA subsidizes the WNBA, and they want to continue to exist with that subsidy while acknowledging that they lose money. And that means that Caitlin Clark is going to get the amount of money that everybody in that position deserves, earns. Actually, that's more than they deserve. But I will tell the President of the United States, and I will tell Ro Khanna, and I will tell all the leftists going, this is ridiculous, why are these people, blah, 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 it's so bad. First of all, they don't understand basic economics. Secondly, there was literally nothing preventing Caitlin Clark from entering the NBA draft. There is nothing. Still, to this day, I don't think the NBA draft has happened because the NBA season is ongoing. They're just starting their playoffs, and the draft is usually in the offseason. So Caitlin Clark could look at whatever offer she has from whatever team that drafted her and say, you know what, I'm going to hold off on signing this contract. I'm going to make myself, declare myself eligible for the NBA. Now, if the NBA's, what is the NBA's average salary? $9.6 million versus $102,751 for the WNBA. Those are the two average salaries. Even if Caitlin Clark got just $1 million, look, I don't know what the league minimum is. I imagine it's less than $1 million, or more than $1 million. But if she got the minimum, she would still be making, she'd be making a ton more money than she would in the WNBA. So why wouldn't she take her up on that? Well, because that contract would be contingent on a little inconvenient thing. Wildly inconvenient, I know. She'd have to make the team. Now, she'd get a signing bonus, or she'd get some kind of money during the training camp tryout thing. She might have to go play in Europe for a little bit. She might, She might not even make it to that stage. She probably wouldn't make it to that stage. And I know she's celebrated, and I don't care if you want to celebrate her. Go ahead. Knock yourself out. Celebrate whatever you want. I looked it up a little bit just because I got sick of all the hype. I tend to recoil from things I'm told society loves and everybody loves, and oh, we're all celebrating. I just naturally recoil from it. It's just a part of my personality. So when everybody's talking about Caitlin Clark, the greatest basketball player, college basketball player of all time, she broke Pete Mihaljevic's, whatever the hell his name is, his record. Oh, it's incredible. It's awesome. And they're like, well, that's impressive. She scored a lot of points there. And then I looked into it. Pistol Pete played at a time when there was no three-point shot at all. Not even like the line was at a different point. There's no three-point shot at all. He was allegedly very good at distance, but it didn't matter if he shot a half-court point. It was a shot. It was still 2 points. Caitlin Clark lives in a time when they've got a very short three-point line in college basketball, so she could rack up some points that way. But okay, it's a bit different. Doesn't matter. To understand, look, the baseballs were different in Babe Ruth's day versus the baseball, different in Hank Aaron's day versus steroid use, different in Barry Bonds' day, but the game sort of evolved. I understand that. But also, Pete wasn't allowed to play. See, NCAA rules back when Pete was in college in the 60s, freshmen were not allowed to play. They were not allowed. It's not like you have to have limited time. They were not allowed to play. So that means that Pete set his record in 3 years without a three-point line, whereas Caitlin had 4 full years and a three-point line. I'm not discounting what she did. I'm just trying to give it some perspective. Completely, it's apples to toenails. Comparison. When you get into the facts of the matter, she had 4 years, a 3-point line. He had 3 years and no 3-point line. It's wildly different. So she's good. She's great. She's the best female basketball player there is. But to sit there and argue that she's the greatest basketball player, college basketball player ever is impossible to measure. And any way in which it could be measured demonstrates that it's simply not true, not remotely true. So you can whine about, oh, she needs to be paid more, she needs to be paid. Okay, great. You know what? If she is the draw, that Democrats want to pay her based on what they think. They're using this as an opportunity. They want to pay her based on what they think she's going to do. They want to declare her as, this is what the left does, is they just declare things to be that aren't and then insist them into existence many times. Not really. They just insist against reality. If she's a boon to the league, if she is a wonder for the league and the ratings go up and suddenly the league turns a profit because she's so wonderful, then great. A rising tide lifts all boats. Everybody will make more money. If she goes out there and blows out her knee and can't play a game ever at all in the league, nothing will change. The fact of the matter is, if you want any league to pay you more, then put a better product out there. Get people interested. Attract an audience. If you are, you know, on the professional cornhole circuit, if you watch late night HBO or late night ESPN, you'll find it. There's people who are exceedingly good at it, but ultimately it's just, you know, something people do while they're drinking beer. It's fat guys wearing tight shirts throwing beanbags 30 feet and going, okay, that's great. What else you got? You're a professional beanbag. Why is professional beanbag not being paid as much as professional golf? It's roughly the same concept. You're trying to get something into a small hole at distance. Because beanbag people don't play. It's not that pop. Golf, everybody aspires to be a good golfer. Beanbag, people go, all right, I'll play a game. Yeah, you know what? I'm done. I'm out of beer. I'm going to go whatever, go back to the game. They quit it. You have to deal with the reality on the ground. You get the WNBA to explode to become wildly popular and more popular than the NBA, then Caitlin Clark will be on easy street. But she's also always welcome, any of them are welcome, to walk across the street to the NBA and give it a shot, give it a tryout. That they haven't, that they won't, kind of tells you something, doesn't it? So as you hear the arguments over trans sports this and trans sports that, and all women are unpaid unfairly, the left knows the reality of the situation, the differences between men and women. They know the differences between the audiences and pay, and it's justified, and women are overpaid technically. But they're never going to admit it because it's not politically advantageous for them to admit it. They have to be forced to admit it. We need somebody to be the Juana Man of the WNBA. What is a Juana Man? There's a movie called Juana Man. It's a really bad, I think one of the Wayans brothers was in it. NBA player somehow gets kicked out of the NBA, pretends to be, this is back, it'd be a hate crime to make this movie now, even though the actors are black. Decides to pretend to be a woman, not in a trans way, but like put on a wig and be the old drag queen sort of transvestite way and play in the WNBA. What we need is LeBron to retire. What we need is a couple of, it doesn't even have to be LeBron level. LeBron has more money than God. He's not going to do it. Plus, he's a lefty. What you need is a couple of bench riders to go, you know what, to hell with this. I'm non-binary, which is you don't have to pretend to be a woman. I'm non-binary. I identify as a woman sometimes, or I'm gender fluid and something, and go out there and dominate in the WNBA. Just dominate in the WNBA. How do I know they could do it? Because I'm not an idiot. The worst player in the NBA would probably be the best player in the WNBA, because a woman 6'5 can make a hell of a jump shot, but not really against a dude who's 7'1. Right? There's a difference there physically. So Democrats can pretend it doesn't exist, it doesn't happen, we don't know, where everybody's the same. We're not. If we were, Caitlin Clark and all of the other women who are out there who just got drafted to the WNBA, they just had their big draft, some of them, any of them, all of them would go, you know what, I'm gonna at least try for the NBA. Why not? I'm the greatest of all time. I'm going to go for the NBA. Because why not? What's the downside? Well, the downside is the humiliation. The downside is reality. She doesn't need the humiliation. And she knows the reality. It's the political hacks who know it too, who just want to deny it because they think they can get political advantage off of stupid people. And it, frankly, to be honest with you, it probably works. It probably does work. That's the saddest part of all. Since we're talking about stupidity, ladies and gentlemen, let's talk about National Public Radio. Now, I've talked about this before. I don't think this is going to make much of a difference. There is a push. I think people think they're going to get her fired. There's this weird sort of, we're going to get us a scalp mentality that permeates politics on both sides of the aisle. The left, of course, started it. They've perfected cancel culture. And the right is trying to catch up and hold people accountable to it and to the same standards. And for that, I'm all in favor. I'm all in favor of that. But you want realistic expectations. A corporation that is interested in not offending people, not whatever it is inclined to look at somebody saying ridiculous, stupid, offensive things and go, wait a second, we didn't sign up for this. And they might distance themselves. You know, the new CEO, let's just pretend it's, Target. I don't know the CEO of Target. They're left wing. But if a better thing would be the woman in charge of advertising and outreach, new media or whatever it was, for Bud Light. When they said, hey, you know what would be great? Let's get Dylan Mulvaney. Let's send this dude some cans with his face on it. And he'll post a video about what it's like to be a girl, celebrating 1 year of being a girl, and it'll be great. And boy, howdy, we'll open ourselves up to a new audience. You have to be blissfully unaware of what the product is, what the reality is. Ulta Beauty can have, you know, men dressed as women and go, this is, everybody's pretty and beautiful. And the people who shop at Ulta Beauty don't care. But the people who drink Bud Light are like, why is this weird dude in a dress get special treatment from Bud Light? If I'm subsidizing this, I'm done. I'm out. I'm not interested. It's a stupid decision, and that woman was then fired. She made a bad business decision. That's what happens and can happen in the business world. The left does it all the time. They did it to the guy who co-founded Mozilla. You know, they made the Firefox browser. The guy co-founded the company. He gave, I think, $1,000 to the Prop 8 people out in California when gay marriage was on the ballot. The left found out about it. And they said, this guy's a hate monger. He's a good progressive. He just didn't support gay marriage at a time when Barack Obama and Joe Biden didn't support gay marriage. And the people of California didn't support gay marriage. But they found out about him and they said, well, this is an outrage. How dare you? And they immediately ran him out of the company. Employees were saying we'll have to quit en masse. And so he had to, Brandon Eicher, I think his name was. But he had to go. And go he went. That's what the left does. And the right is trying to catch up. In certain circumstances, like the Bud Light situation, you can make people get a big dose of their own medicine. The woman who came up with that idea is a big-time lib progressive. And, you know, you sit there and you go, that's a shame, but too bad. But there are other circumstances where, like Ulta Beauty's case, they're just not going to care. They don't care. Most of the time, they don't care. If they're in a position to be liberal all the time, they're not going to care. They're suicide bombers. So looking at NPR's new CEO, Catherine Marr, and pointing out that she's a liberal and a rabid liberal and an anti-American, racist, condescending, rich white lady who has a white savior complex, and pointing it out and going, she's biased, she's heading your news, you can't... They don't care. These are not things that they're shocked to discover after the fact. You're shocked to discover after the fact something that is a mid-level manager you just hired and you didn't do a thorough background check. If you're hiring a CEO, the board did a thorough background check on it. It wasn't as though they find out about this and go, oh my God, I'm horrified. It's they found out about these tweets and these political views and said, we should consider Catherine Marr. So the effort to get her out is going to fail. It should be an effort, if you want to damage their ratings, fine. That's good. They're inoculated by being taxpayer funded. That's fine. Damage their ratings. The effort should be to paint everybody who works at NPR as the same. It's going to continue. They're not going to fire her, I doubt. So you keep her there, and you say that NPR, the radical left-wing taxpayer-funded thing headed by progressive activist Catherine Marr, you just do that. You use her. Change your objective from running her out to using her. Make her a pejorative term. She really is just a horrible person. She has ridiculous views. She should not be anywhere near the position she's in. Not only because of her political views, but because of her resume doesn't really demonstrate anything close to what she's really only hired because of her political views. She worked at freaking Wikipedia. She has a left-wing resume. And that's it. Not necessarily a resume in journalism or anything like that. Nope. She's a left winger, and the left winger goes, all right, well, we'll hire a left winger. You don't need to know how to do the grunt work. All you need to do is point the grunts in the right direction and make sure the grunts keep going in that right direction. That's why any leftist, you sit there and you go, why would they hire that person to head the company or head the, it's because they're on board politically. It's about the objective. So she gave a TED talk, and part of the, and I'm gonna highlight what she is. So if you listen to NPR, you know what you're getting. She gave a TED talk, and this really actually encapsulates how the left works as a collective. You hear this all the time. It might have started with Oprah or something similar, where people are like, I just want to tell my truth. Right? There's no your truth. There's your thoughts on the truth. There's, you know, your opinions on it. There's the way you, you know, handle the truth. But the truth is the truth is the truth. The sun rises in the east every day, whether you have a horrible sense of direction or not. Right? You get up in the morning and you just close your eyes and twirl, fall to the ground dizzy and nauseous, and the sun comes up, it came up in the east. No matter if the world is spinning in your eyes, no matter what, there is no your truth. Somebody either killed somebody or they didn't kill somebody. They didn't kill somebody to me, but not kill somebody to you. OJ, yeah, that's a bad example since he wasn't convicted because of racial politics. But Ted Kaczynski. He is either the Unabomber or he's not the Unabomber. Well, he was the Unabomber. There's nobody's truth out there that goes, yeah, Ted Kaczynski, who wasn't really the Unabomber. To me, he's always Ted. Okay, well, he's always Ted. He might have been your Uncle Ted, right? Great, your Uncle Ted. Crazy dude living in the woods. Still the Unabomber. Doesn't change the fact that he's the Unabomber, right? There's ways that you think about Uncle Ted versus the way that people who didn't know Uncle Ted think about Uncle Ted as exclusively the Unabomber, whereas you might have some childhood memories that are a little bit different, but he's still a guy who blew up people, right? Killed them because he's an environmental lunatic, leftist, unstable lunatic, nut job. I mentioned lunatic enough. There is no your truth or my truth. There's just the truth. What you choose to do with it is where the difference comes in. So listen to Catherine Marr talk about this during her TED talk, about how there are different truths. There are different. The truth is so subjective, and this is part of how the left engages in politics, and a large part of why they win is they take the obvious and insist it's something else, and then they demand not only that it's something else to them, they force other people to accept it too, and it becomes, usually by submission, by being beaten into submission, it becomes a part of life for people, sadly.
The hard things, the places where we are prone to disagreement, say politics and religion. Well, as it turns out, not only does Wikipedia's model work there, it actually works really well. Because in our normal lives, these contentious conversations tend to erupt over disagreement about what the truth actually is. But the people who write these articles, they're not focused on the truth. They're focused on something else, which is the best of what we can know right now. And after 7 years of working with these brilliant folks, I've come to believe that they are onto something, that perhaps for our most tricky disagreements, seeking the truth and seeking to convince others of the truth might not be the right place to start. In fact, our reverence for the truth might be a distraction that's getting in the way of finding common ground and getting things done.
You gotta love that. Yeah, it's quest for truth, this pesky thing for trying to find the truth. It just keeps getting in the way of finding common ground and getting things done. How? How? How would that even be possible? This is the most vapid air sandwich, rock soup, load of crap you could ever hear, like hippie crap. Everybody has their own truth, and it might be getting, all we need to do is get together and think about this, that, and the other. Oh, and maybe if we just put aside our truths and we find common ground based on what then? If you get rid of truth, Common ground based on what? Oh, I don't know. We're just going to sit around. Ultimately, she's talking about compromise between liberals. She lives in a world where different truths, where different opinions are not allowed. She is the bartender in Blues Brothers. What kind of music you got here? We have both kinds, country and Western. What kind of opinions do you have? We have both kinds. We have rabid leftist and progressive. Oh, great. Celebrate diversity. You go, sister. But to sit there, there is no truth. Truth is getting in the way of finding common ground. Now, she's doing a TED Talk. Look, if she did this at a high school auditorium, most people would go, what? First of all, nobody would have showed up. Secondly, people would look at it and go, what in the hell is wrong? What is she talking about? This is stupid hippie crap at best, or literally like certifiably insane at worst. We should probably gird our loins and make sure that this woman doesn't start. Is this person having a breakdown? Have they got some sort of rabid rabies infection? What's going on here? Are we watching somebody in the throes of schizophrenia? But because it happens at a TED Talk, and TED Talks have been elevated to the point of they're supposed to be revered, that the audience is sitting there rapt going, oh, yeah, right, oh, absolutely. There is no truth. No, there is a truth. There is a truth. What you think of it, whether you care, how you interpret it, that's where the difference comes in. But there's no truth. You come across a dead body in the street, and somebody goes, this person is not dead. And somebody else goes, no, this person is dead. No, everybody goes, this person is dead. Could be this person just collapsed, this person fell off the roof, this person was punched and stabbed or shot or whatever. It doesn't matter. The fact, the irrefutable truth, is that person is dead. You set about to investigate how that happened. Was it a natural death? Was it an unnatural death? And you go from there. The left is like, no, 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 no. We don't want to do that. We can't do that. And to one person's murder victim is another person's napping neighbor or whatever. That's absurd. But you have to use absurdity to illustrate the point of how insane these people are. They're beyond absurd. It's insane. It's unstable. But it's not unstable that I don't think she believes this crap in this way. But it's a useful tool to manipulate people. It's a useful tool to try and get people beaten into submission out of fear of either, you know, not being part of the in crowd or fear of losing their job or whatever, to go, yeah, that's your truth. It's their truth that it's different. No, it's not. Well, you're a racist. What? Horrible. And you just shut up. You bully people into submission, or you confuse them into submission. You set up a series of flaming hoops and tell them to jump through. It's everything from up to, you know, what your truth is down to use my pronouns. That's about control. You're unstable if you're offended by somebody misgendering you. You are what you are. You know what you are. If you're not a they, them, or a zeer, like, oh, you're not using my pronouns. The only way you use pronouns is when somebody's not there. All right? You're talking to somebody. You're looking at them. You maybe say you, and that's it. But you're not a third person plural when I'm not around or you're not around. But they want to control what you do and how you refer to them to get control, not because they care really about how you refer to them, but they want to get you under control. They want to break you like a horse so that they can do other things to you if you allow them to control how you refer to them when they're not around. And what they do to enforce that is they deputize everybody else around them, around you. So the people who enforce, these are my pronouns. Nobody goes, hey, you're using my pronoun. You're not using my proper pronouns. No, it's the people, other people, because they're not around when you're talking about them in the third person. When you're referring to them, that's when you use pronouns. It's so that they can break other people. So the person you're talking to goes, you know, you're called Chiwongo, she. And her preferred pronouns are they, them. You know, you should be using they, them. You've now created an army of deputy drones to go out and do your bidding and enforce your will on that to keep people in line. It is subtle. It's as subtle as it was my whole life, Kiev. Why? Because that's how it's spelled. But now it's Kiev. It was illegal aliens because that's what they are in law. But now it went to undocumented. And now it's migrants. Okay, you're changing the rules. You're changing the words. You're changing the definitions. And sadly, so many people on the right are going along with it. They're just going along with it. Flip on Fox. How many people are saying migrants versus illegal aliens? There wasn't probably, although you never know, but there probably wasn't a memo issued saying you shall refer to the better than you people crossing across the southern border illegally as migrants now. You can throw in an illegal migrant every once in a while, but migrants nonetheless, instead of illegal aliens, because no person is illegal. They don't need a memo. It becomes part of the culture. You recognize that you're suddenly saying something that other people don't. It feels dirty. It feels good. Whatever. You just go, all right, I'm getting looks. People are saying stuff. I'm going to go ahead and play their game. That's how they win. That's why you don't give them an inch, because they will get that mile eventually. Now I want to play you, but just so you have the full context, and it doesn't get any better, of Catherine Marr's little statement there at her TED Talk. Just so you finish the rest of her quote, find out how insane it is, and listen to the end of this about how she basically says that it's always the left who projects these things on other people. It's your gender. It's your sexual orientation. It's your skin color that determines who you are. And they all defer, like, you have different lived experiences. Everybody has different lived experiences than you do. It doesn't matter. Your skin color. We have the same lived experiences because we have the same melanin level. That's stupid. That's wildly stupid. I'll tell you a quick anecdote. Tucker Carlson, we're sitting around. God, this is, what year is it? This has got to be 12 years ago by now. No, 15 years ago by now. Sitting around the Daily Caller offices. And I forget, I was talking. He loves to hear stories about people's lives and growing up. And if they involve doing stupid things or getting too drunk, and he thinks they're hilarious and he loves to hear it. And he enjoys it. And I forget what we were talking about. We were talking about my upbringing. And he says to me, you know, I didn't grow up rich. And I just stopped and I looked at him. Because I was probably giving him some sad tale of woe about how I grew up. And I didn't grow up rich. And I looked at him and I said, you went to boarding school in Connecticut. You didn't live in Connecticut. Your parents sent you to Connecticut from Southern California. Like, you might have been the poorest kid in your boarding school, but that does not make you Oliver Twist. Like, okay, yeah. No, he's like, well, let me rephrase. It was not. That's true. A lot of people, there's a huge difference. Tucker and I have pretty much the same skin color. There's a huge difference in our lived experiences. Yet for both of us, the sun rises in the east. For both of us, Joe Biden is president. For both of us, groceries have gone up. You know, there are certain universal truths that, and all universal truths, all truths are universal, that it doesn't matter where you come from. It doesn't matter what you look like. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. Tucker's making millions of dollars. I'm not making millions of dollars. Joe Biden is senile. He's not more senile for me. He's not more senile for Tucker. He is senile. It is. It bothers both of us, so I can't say that it bothers one more. But for Catherine Marr, Joe Biden is senile. She just doesn't care because what's being done in his name, she likes. He's still senile. You can deny it all you want. You can insist the sun rises in the north. And you can do so and claim that you care and know and there's no question about it and you just will not budge on that. It will not make it true. You cannot will a man into a woman or a woman into a man. Reality is not dependent upon your belief in it, is what I say all the time. And I think that should probably be on a T-shirt because I think that's pretty smart. So listen to Catherine Marr basically say that it does. It depends. Your skin color changes how you view things. And ultimately, she's referring to your truth, which she's confusing deliberately with your opinion on things.
Now, that is not to say that the truth doesn't exist, nor is it to say that the truth isn't important. Clearly, the search for the truth has led us to do great things, to learn great things. But I think if I were to really ask you to think about this, one of the things that we could all acknowledge is that part of the reason we have such glorious chronicles to the human experience and all forms of culture is because we acknowledge there are many different truths. And so in the spirit of that, I'm certain that the truth exists for you and probably for the person sitting next to you. But this may not be the same truth. This is because the truth of the matter is very often, for many people, what happens when we merge facts about the world with our beliefs about the world. So we all have different truths. They're based on things like where we come from, how we were raised, and how other people perceive us.
They're not based on those at all. The truth is dependent upon how somebody else perceives. No, that's not at all. The truth is the truth. She's changing the language right there. She's manipulating. This is what I imagine would happen if you threw up on a keyboard. It just spells this out. As you wipe it up, you could type out a speech that was more coherent than this psychobabble. Honestly. This is the world that we live in, and this woman is going to... I imagine she's making mid to high six figures, if not seven figures, as the new CEO of NPR. And this is the garbage that she spews. This is the woman who will... tell you you're racist. I tell you, and it's wildly racist to go, you're different. You view things differently because of your upbringing. Code, you view things differently because of your skin color. No, you know, there's just up is up, down is down, left is left, right is right. It doesn't have anything to do with, for black people, left is actually behind them. It's backwards. No. And it's always the... It's always the white ladies who do this sort of crap, too. You just sit there and you go, good God, hippy-dippy white lady. They fail up. They make a ton of money. So, I mean, who's crazy here? But it is one of those things, you know, to decry the evils of capitalism whilst pulling into her doorman building and counting her fortune. Oh, capitalism is terrible. Let's talk about inherited wealth. Well, let's not go crazy. Let's not talk about that. That was earned a long time ago. We can't take that away. All my money. We need an estate tax. Why is all your money in a tax-exempt charitable trust? Tax the rich. What about you? No, richer than me. Richer. We should overtax people who make $1 more than I do and keep that as the benchmark. Yeah, this is what's going on. So don't expect her to be run out of NPR. But keep in mind what she is and then couch everything NPR does through that. That's what should be done. Burning calories trying to fire her for these things. This is why she was hired. Do you think somebody who would consciously sit down and write that speech or a speech that's even part of for a TED Talk is somebody who comes off completely differently in an interview? In a series of job interviews, in the casual conversations you have whilst setting up for a job interview. No, that's who she is. That's the gobbledygook she told the board searching for. It's the sort of crap and the attitude that she brought to the table. And they, being all liberals themselves, said, this is exactly what we want. This is what NPR needs. It's insane. You're not going to fire her for the reason she was hired. But use her to expose everything NPR PBS does and in the fight to defund that monstrosity. Speaking of people who are race obsessed, let's go across the pond over there to Scotland, all right? Ireland lost their prime minister because they were a little bit, he was insane, leftist, and eventually people do recoil from leftism. Soon, I suspect they'll do the same in Scotland. Scotland passed the hate crimes laws where you can't be critical of a protected class on the telly or on the internet. You can't say mean things about people. And J.K. Rowling just said, yeah, come and arrest me. And like, men are men, women are women. I don't care how far you tuck it back. No, reality is going to change. Reality doesn't change based on that. And they all sort of just collapsed. The law just collapsed. There's a lot of complaints because there's a whole bunch of leftists out there going, somebody said mean things about me. Somebody sent me mean vibes or whatever. But the government realized, and she probably deserves reward or awards for this, although not to be elevated because she's still a committed leftist. But she and Elon Musk have done more for freedom of speech than anybody since the Founding Fathers when they crafted the First Amendment. Because she has put out there, look, if you're a woman in Scotland, and probably would do it for a man too, and because she was tweeting, men are men, women are women, it doesn't, and a bunch of trans people were like, this is a hate crime. And the government said, we're not going to arrest her. Then J.K. Rowling said, if you've been arrested, if you say something online, you've been arrested for it in Scotland, tell me what it was, and I'll say it too. And so if somebody else is arrested for saying, hey, that trans woman is really a man, well, that's a hate crime. You've otherized somebody. You've misgendered or whatever. Then J.K. Rowling will do it. They can't arrest J.K. Rowling. She's too high profile. Not for something like this. And, you know, she kicks a kid into a well or something, you can arrest her for that. But for something like this, you cannot arrest your most famous writer. You just can't. You'd be the laughing stock of the world. So she has sort of neutered Scotland's hate crime law. But the idiot behind it is Scottish Prime Minister Humza Yousaf. And if you think, well, that sounds like a traditional Scottish name, you're not very bright. You don't know what Scotland is. But he is, I don't know where his family's from. He's born in Scotland. He's Scottish. He's the Scottish Prime Minister. He was interviewed the other day talking about Twitter, or X, as it's now called. I can't get used to calling it. It's always Twitter to me. But talking about X, and listen to this is another peek into the progressive mindset. The Scottish Prime Minister pronounces the platform and Elon Musk as racist. Then admits, and it's a cesspool of bigotry, racism, hatred. You know, he's the one who came up with this stupid law. And then he admits, he doesn't admit like he was questioned about it. He just goes on to casually mention. He doesn't check his mentions. He doesn't know what he just declared to be true for a fact. But that didn't stop him from declaring it to be true, because leftists project their own bigotries onto everybody else. See, Humza Yousaf is not white, and he's a progressive. So therefore, everybody who is white is a racist, which is weird because you're like the leader of the country. I would think that, again, Barack Obama even sort of laid off the, God, this country is a horrible racist cesspool stuff after he won the presidency. He's like, okay, that argument doesn't really hold a whole lot of water. In a parliamentary system, it's different. You can cobble together a coalition government. You don't need a majority, but still the concept remains the same. But listen to this guy talk about how he's sure that X is a cesspool of racism because it has to be. Because he's not white and there are people in Scotland who are white. It's really just, you've elected me your leader, you filthy freaking animals, I hate you all, you bigots. I'm like, whoa, what kind of speech is that? Maybe not as crude, but essence is the same.
Online, it is, frankly, often a cesspit, a sewer of hatred on certain platforms, X perhaps being the worst platform, in my opinion, that hasn't done enough to regulate online hatred. and tackle that online hatred. It can. I mean, I don't look at my notifications necessarily, but I suspect, you know, if any of your if anybody on this conversation or call was to search my name on X, otherwise previously known as Twitter, then you could spot Islamophobia and racism on multiple posts on any given day. And so I don't think our social media platforms do nearly enough to tackle and combat hatred and fake news.
I don't know this to be true or not, but I know it's a cesspool of racism and Islamophobia. Or maybe it's just that you suck, right? Have you ever thought of that? You ever thought, all these people, they never think, maybe I'm the problem. No, it's everybody. Hey, if there's a common denominator, the common denominator is the problem. I always date abusive jerks. Maybe you're attracted to them. Okay, maybe you want to deal with that. It's not like they turn, you don't turn them into it. You are attracted to them from the beginning. Everybody's out to get me. Everybody says I'm horrible. And that's obviously because I'm not white and I'm Islamic. No, maybe you just suck, dude. It's just, you know, sorry to break it to you. I get it. You've probably got a wall full of participation ribbons and the highest self-esteem of anybody who's not accomplished a whole lot, but that doesn't, again, change reality. But you notice he has made a pronunciation about Twitter, that I declare Twitter to be a cesspool. I haven't seen it. I don't go there. I don't check it. But it's got to be, right? Because there's a whole bunch of white people out there who aren't bending to my will. I've got an arse right here, and they're not currently kissing it. Just to give you a bit of a flavor of what Prime Minister Hamza Youssef is like, he gave a speech not that long ago complaining about how it is that the Scottish government has too many white people in it. Swear to God.
But why are we so surprised when the most senior positions in Scotland are filled almost exclusively by those who are white? Take my portfolio alone. The Lord President, white. The Lord Justice Clerk, white. Every High Court judge, white. The Lord Advocate, white. The Solicitor General, white. The Chief Constable, white. Every Deputy Chief Constable, white. Every Assistant Chief Constable, white. The Head of the Law Society, white. The Head of the Faculty of Advocates, white. Every prison governor, white. And not just justice. The chief medical officer, white. The chief nursing officer, white. The chief veterinary officer, white. The chief social work advisor, white. Almost every trade union in this country headed by people who are white. In the Scottish government, every director general is white. Every chair of every public body is white. That is not good enough.
That is not good enough. That's near good enough there. Too white. Now, what is it the left always bitches and whines about? We need representation that looks like America. This group is, they're underrepresented when it's good. They're overrepresented when it's bad. Blah. So I thought, let's just, for gits and shiggles, go ahead and reverse that in your hand. Let's look up the demography of Scotland. It's available. The internet exists. Okay, we'll start at the bottom. Other, whatever you imagine other is, 0.27%. Okay, so others. Then it's mixed or multiple ethnic groups, 0.37%. Okay. Caribbean or black, 0.12%. Again, of the population of Scotland in whole. Okay, that's okay. African, 0.56%. Okay. Asian Scottish or Asian British. Just difference of India, Pakistan, Bangladesh, whatever. 2.66%. Now ends the tour of all the other ethnicities in Scotland that aren't white. Now we come to the white numbers. Now, granted, these are 2011 numbers. They may have changed a little bit, but probably not that dramatically. 96.02% white, right? 96% of the population, even if it's 95% of the population. Somehow this horrible racist country that's overrun by white people has elected a prime minister who is both not white and not Christian. God, they're bigots. No, I might say they're idiots, but that's based on politics, not because the guy is a non-white Muslim. And you have to sit there and you go, how long is the country going to take this? How long, how far down the road of self-abuse is a country willing to go? And the answer is probably a long way. Honestly, if you look at, you sit there and you go, how long is that woman going to stay with the man who beats her and the kids? Well, some women never leave. At some point, you would think that the people of Scotland would be sick of, thank you, sir, may I have another politics? You know what? Are you going to watch the Prime Minister's speech tonight? Oh, yeah, I'm going to watch it. It's going to be great. I'm going to go down to the pub. I'm going to have a couple of points. It's going to be wonderful. It's been a long time since I've been told I'm absolutely horrible. And I can't wait for somebody I'm paying who makes way more money than I do, who lives a cush life, to sit there and tell me how much I suck, because I sometimes forget. You'd think sooner or later you'd hit bottom. You'd think sooner or later that people would recoil. The pendulum can only swing in one direction far enough. It will come back eventually. Whether it comes back too late remains to be seen. But, this is the world. This is the progressive world. Remember, the left is evil, not stupid. And they are the same everywhere around the world, whether they're running NPR or a country that eats haggis. I want to shift gears and bring the stupidity back home. As Lord knows, we've got a lot of it. We might even be ground zero for much of it. Corinne Jean-Pierre yesterday was asked about gas prices and whether or not Joe Biden wants to tap the strategic petroleum. Gas prices are up again. And it's interesting. Compared to last year at this time, gas prices are 3 cents cheaper. Now, gas prices are up over 50% since Joe Biden took office. But they are down from their all-time high, which also occurred under Joe Biden. And I want to play this because it's funny to hear Corinne Jean-Pierre try to make this argument, but it's also illustrative of the argument I always make, the thing I always say, that if you control the unit of measure, you control everything. There's a reality. Gas prices is up 53% since Joe Biden took office. Gas prices only down over the past year 3 cents this time. Corinne Jean-Pierre is saying, yes, gas prices are down from last year, which they are, by 3 cents. She doesn't point out the 3 cents, I don't believe. The reporter points out the 3 cents. She's just saying down. They're both saying, this is their truths, different truths. What Corinne Jean-Pierre is saying is true. They're down from last year. But they're down 3 cents. So you fill up your tank, you have a 10-gallon tank, you've saved relative to last year 30 cents. Now, before you start telling your boss where they can stick it and quitting your job because you saved 30 cents on a fill-up, you might want to rethink that philosophy. But again, you recognize that the White House is trying to make that argument that, you're saving money over last year. You are, but it's 30 cents. And then she brings in, and it's down significantly from the all-time high, which Joe Biden is also responsible for. And the only way it came down is he drained more than half of the strategic petroleum reserve, which is supposed to be there for emergencies and, God forbid, in case there's wars or something like that, which he has not refilled because his policies have made it too expensive to refill. Plus, if the gas prices and oil prices are so high, it's not only going to be expensive to refill. Stripping the market of that much crude oil would raise prices again. You're taking, several days worth of supply over the course of it. It's a huge, and suddenly the demand gets higher for the same amount of supply. The rules of supply and demand then therefore dictate you can either ration it or you have to raise the price. That's just how it works. So Joe Biden has screwed us six ways from Sunday and everything related to gas. And yet Corinne Jean-Pierre has her binder. She has her facts, her unit of measure, and she's just going to make an argument that essentially boils down to you don't know how good you've got it. And forget the fact that we're better than we were at our worst. and ignore the fact that we're the ones who made it worse.
That's about gas prices. They've been going up over the last month, 20 cents a gallon. Is the president considering any new actions, like releasing more oil from the Strategic Petroleum Reserve?
I don't have any new actions to read out. I will say, I will note that gas prices remain well below their peak back in 2022. I think that's important. And the average gas price right now is cheaper than this time last year. And that's because of what this president has been doing over the last 3 years, including the SPR. Look, let's not forget, jobs are up, wages are up, clean energy manufacturing is up. All of these things are incredibly important because of this president's historic investment that he has made. I think it's important to note that it remains well below the 2022 peak.
But it's only 3 cents lower than a year ago. It's up 52% from when President Biden came into office. Any then talk about changes in policy to encourage future investment in oil and gas industry?
So look, the president's committed to lowering cost. He is. That is something that you see at the center of every economic policy. When you hear him giving remarks, he's talking about lowering costs. He understands how the American people are still being squeezed. And so the reason that it remains below 2022, the gas prices, as you're asking me, is because of the historic investment that this president has made. So, of course, we're going to continue to monitor and do everything that we can to answer those questions by the American people. What else can we do to lower cost? But it is important that it is cheaper. It is cheaper to get gas than it was a year ago. And that's because of what this president has been doing, because of the historic investment that he's taken.
It's because things are cheaper now because of what he did. Well, all right. When gas prices are up, the argument is the president has really no control over gas prices. Gas prices come down, they say, you must thank him now. You must kiss his rear end. Look at what he did for you, you serf. The Lord has dropped gas prices on you. Your Lord, you're the Lord of the manor. Your Duke has dropped the deuce to the prices of gas. You're welcome, peon, as he pees on you. That's not Hunter. But when you look at the reality of it, it is a different story. This is how the left works, by the way. You talk about the various statistics that different groups use to measure what constitutes hate crimes, right? Oh, there are hate attacks, terror attacks, all the terror attacks in the recent years have been by white nationalists. You're like, okay, well, what constitutes? How is it that a trans chick who shoots up a school in Tennessee is considered a white nationalist? Because they're white? They cook the books. But they also start that data set on September 12th, 2001. Why would they do that? Did something happen on September 11th, 2001 if you included that, it would kind of screw up the data a little bit? Let's talk about attempted terror attacks. No, let's not go back any further than that. History started on September 12th, 2001. Everybody knows that. Actually, they start it usually in October of 2001. For no real reason, they don't acknowledge it. They just say going from there to then is look at all these horrible things. Like, well, you're kind of missing a big part of the pie chart there, pal. And they're not missing it. They're obscuring it. They're lying about it. They're hiding it. It's not by accident. It's on purpose. They know what they're doing. Like I say, they're not stupid. They're evil. There's a difference. So you say, well, gas prices are down from their all-time high, which you caused. Gas prices are down from last year. Yeah, by 3 cents. What are you doing with your 30-cent Biden dividend? What are you going to do with that? You can't even buy a scratch-off lottery ticket. So it's... And what's sad is this guy's polling roughly even with Donald Trump. Because people don't like Donald Trump personally. And they hate what Joe Biden did. And you just go, well, okay, vote for the guy you're never going to hang out with anyway. All right? Don't commit suicide out of spite. All right, lastly, I want to play you this clip out of Fairfax County, Virginia, of a mother telling the city government, stop, you can't raise the property taxes. People can't afford it. not that they'll care, but it is a true sentiment that should bother everybody, that the government will look at you and just go, yeah, I don't care, you're a piggy bank to me.
Unlike this board, who received a 20% salary increase effective 2024, and I'm not quite sure what is in front of you, but I am here today, and when I speak to others and others are speaking to me, I typically look at them eye to eye. And I see that a lot of you have been glancing at your cell phones or whatever else might be in front of your screens. However, I've now sat here for an hour and a half, and I would like your attention while I'm speaking. Thanks. So unlike the board, who has received a 20% salary increase effective 2024, it is typical for citizens of Fairfax County to receive just a 3% pay increase year over year for those not seeking a title position change, if that. As we are all aware, the cost of living has soared since the beginning of COVID-19. With all of this being said, us taxpayers are constantly searching for ways to make ends meet and things to cut out of our families' budgets, as these minimal increases in our salary are easily surpassed by the 19% increase in everyday goods and services resulting from inflation. Examples of these cuts include delayed family planning, delayed home repairs, no longer eating out, no vacations, and canceling subscriptions, etc. Since 2019, I have witnessed a 20% increase in my home's equalization rate. However, if I search Zillow, over the past 6 months, only one of the six listings in my townhome community have sold for the appraised value that you guys are assessing my home at. As such, you're proposing an increase to a tax rate in which you are assessing my home at a premium. I am not alone in saying that as my family considers having another kid, we are certain that we cannot afford to expand our family here in Fairfax County. I'm asking you to take the difficult and time-consuming task of sorting through the budget and beginning to prioritize the needs and wants of your citizens that do not require a tax increase. We don't have luxury.
You don't have that luxury. And I love the way that she's like, hey, look at me when I'm talking to you. Because these people don't. They don't care. You are not a human. You don't matter to them. You have to throw their asses out. These are suicide bombers. These are people who will happily destroy their own political career to advance the agenda because they know that they'll be taken care of by the movement. They know that they'll be taken care of by the leftists out there. They don't care what you think. They chant, this is what democracy looks like. They don't believe it in a second. They don't give a crap. Anyway, that's enough for today. Go about your business. Have a wonderful Thursday. Tomorrow's Friday already. Thank God. And we'll get into the, I don't know what the Senate's going to ultimately do. Probably just dismiss this Mayorkas thing. So we'll get into that. And everything else that happens between now and then. See you then.